It hadn't taken much to convince Pengo to join Project Equalizer. At first, Dobb flattered him by letting him know how much they needed him and by telling him that Sergei had expressed a particular interest in meeting him. Hagbard had too many limitations. Given enough phone numbers and passwords, Hagbard could browse for hours inside VMS systems. He knew how to log in and find a directory. He knew how to search for keywords and files. He knew what a disk was and where electronic mail was stored. But beyond that, he was lost. Ask him, for instance, to determine which machines were connected to the system he was on, and he was utterly confused. Often, he was too stoned to work very efficiently. He needed too much time to think of the next step. A gifted hacker worked as much on spontaneous leaps of intuition as on anything else. And for all his grandiose theories, Hagbard couldn't program. The group needed a VMS expert who could program. Pengo was the natural choice. Carl made it clear that it could be a lucrative venture. Pengo had theories of his own on how to get money for hacking. He developed a 3-point strategy. One idea was to sell a certain amount of know-how and charge a more reasonable sum, perhaps 150,000 marks or 75,000. Another suggestion was that he organize some seminars for the East Bloc to teach the Soviets about technology and hacking. The third idea, which Pengo seemed to latch onto with the most enthusiasm, was to convince the Soviets to set him up to do a safe network prowling from East Berlin. That is, to supply him with a top-of-the-line VAX computer with plenty of storage capacity, a high-speed modem for fast data transfer, and secure telephone lines that couldn't be traced. Of the three ideas, the last one seemed to have the most potential. It would give the Soviets the software they needed while providing Pengo with some easy money. That, Pengo decided, was the idea he would emphasize with Sergei. But he could hardly meet Sergei empty-handed. At Carl's urging, Pengo looked for something to take over as a first enticement. Any software he could get his hands on, as long as it seemed impressive, would probably do. First, he managed to procure a magnetic tape containing some software from previous forays, a chip design program called a PAL assembler from a hack into Thomson Brandt, the state-owned French electronics manufacturer, and smaller programs for the VAX. But to get something worthwhile from the networks, he would have to stay logged on to a computer system for a long time. That meant choosing a computer on which he knew the security was lax. He had been inside Digital Equipment Corporation's Singapore Computer Center before, and he knew it fairly well. As far as he could tell, there was little security at the Singapore facility. The system manager seemed to be asleep at the switch, seldom checking to see who was logged on to the computer. It was easy to get on the Singapore VAX with full privileges, and Pengo knew it would be easy to stay on for a long time. He logged on late one night and found exactly what he needed. It was a security program for VMS called SecurePack, developed at Digital in 1983 for internal use on digital computers. The program, which allowed system managers to alter levels of privilege on a computer, would make an interesting nugget for the Soviets. Pengo downloaded the program and put it onto several diskettes. He also made about 30 pages of printouts, taking care to delete any information as to how the computers were actually penetrated. On the night before the trip to East Berlin, Pengo, Dobb, and Peter Carl spent long hours hacking from Dobb's room at the Hotel Schweizerhof. Hash was burning in abundance, and although it helped to keep spirits high, it also produced one unfortunate side effect. When he was high, Pengo had the habit of dwelling for hours at a time on one problem, which undermined his overall productivity considerably and augmented the phone bill. Every few hours, Peter Carl would poke his head into the room to check on Pengo's progress, and each time he threw up his hands in disgust. Pengo was costing them hundreds of marks in connect time, and from what Carl could tell, he wasn't producing anything. Pengo decided to put a digital record of the session from the Schweizerhof onto several diskettes, and to take those over too. He and Carl emerged bleary-eyed from the hotel the following morning and started out for Sergei's office while Dobb slept off the excesses of the night. Their loot stored in Carl's briefcase, they boarded the subway at Wittenbergplatz, a short walk from the hotel. They changed to a different line and boarded the train that traversed the eastern portion of the city, speeding past abandoned stations. It was a familiar trip to Pengo. He had been to East Berlin many times when he was younger. On Christmas and Easter, when his parents were still together, the Hubners from West Berlin went to visit the Hubners in East Berlin. And even if Pengo hadn't stopped to consider the quirk of fate that brought him into the world in the West, it's likely that his indifference to borders was a sign that he understood, if only subconsciously, Berlin's provincial nature, a place where, in the end, allegiance was arbitrary. Just 15 minutes from the time they set out, they had reached the Friedrichstrasse station in East Berlin. With 45 minutes to spare, they took a slight detour to Alexanderplatz. Karl produced a fat joint and lit it, muttering that he needed it. Pengo could only laugh and wave his hands at the offering. It was too early in the day to get stoned. Besides, he was nervous. When Sergei greeted them in his office, Pengo already had an inkling that this was not going to be an easy sell. He had to convince the Russian that he was a valuable asset, someone worth investing in. Dob had portrayed Sergei as someone who knew nothing about computers and could only recite from a list of things the Soviets might be interested in. Compilers, source code, and information from military computers. Pengo could see that he might not get much further that day. But where Dob tended to be passive, letting things happen to him, Pengo was more aggressive and outspoken. He told Sergei that he was well-versed in VMS, and that he could bore his way into many different computers. By way of example, he named MasTec, a U.S. semiconductor maker, Teradyne, a Boston high technology company, Thomson Brandt, Philips in France, and Genrad in Dallas. He went on to list more conquests: ESLAC, Fermilab, MIT, Union Carbide. If Sergei were interested in individual accounts and logins, Pengo said, he would sell them. For an account at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, for instance, he suggested a price of 150,000 marks. Sergei didn't seem to be responding, so Pengo came out with the rest of his plan. First, he suggested that he conduct hacking seminars for the Soviets. An alternative would be that the Soviets set him up to conduct safe hacking from East Berlin. Sergei said that didn't interest him. He took out his order list and read aloud from it. His customers back in Moscow, he said, needed Unix and VMS source code and compilers. VMS version 4.5 alone could bring the West Germans 250,000 marks, $125,000. Compilers, another 30,000 marks each. As for the 30 or so pages of computer printouts the two young visitors had brought along, Sergei said he had no idea what to do with them. Nonetheless, in addition to the customary 600 marks, Sergei handed Karl an envelope packed with 100-mark notes and invited his two visitors out to a meal. As he and Karl left East Berlin and headed back to Dob's room at the Schweizerhof, they counted the money. It was 3,000 marks, of which Karl gave Pengo 1,000. Pengo felt less discouraged than self-important. He had made progress. A Russian KGB agent had listened to him talk for an hour. The Russian hadn't said yes, but then again he hadn't said no, and when he examined more closely the information Pengo had already provided, Sergei would be ready to deliver the vax. Project Equalizer was becoming Pengo's own first step toward becoming a paid hacker. Not just any hacker, but the best hacker in the world. He knew that he could get what the Russians wanted, if only he had the right equipment.